Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Podcast, episode 36. The first, nope, that's wrong, the second podcast of April. It's the Thursday podcast, but I think we just released this early. A little treat, a little early. Spring isn't quite here yet. It's snowing in half the country, treat.
It's so nice where I'm at.
Oh, okay.
Don't give away my location. But it's Hawaii.
That's Trill Ballins, folks, and of course 2 a.m. Ken in the Jack morning. As well. Ken Jack, did you have any bread today?
I actually only had a meal replacement shake today. That's the only thing I've consumed since my calzone yesterday.
If you just drank just meal replacement shakes, would you poop or would you pee?
I actually read about this on an article earlier. Some guy, apparently, they gave him like, he was 500 pounds and they gave him some sort of like nutrient paste or something for like a year straight without eating any solid food. And he lost like 400 or something like 150 pounds in like a year.
No, but that's not the question I asked you.
That was the point. So he only pooped once every month.
Wow. So it's like all the nutrient gunk would build up into one log and then he would dookie it out. That's wild,
hey,
man.
Get rid of that thing. It sounds like you're talking through a pillow.
Yeah, dude. Keep this in though, because Kinjak built a pop filter out of a fucking cardboard box and an old t-shirt.
Work for the skits purposes, but I was also used from further away.
Yeah, the skits
sounds like shit. Somebody on our Reddit today said they love me, but they are tired of me getting owned, or that I got owned way too often. I mean, that's who I am. That's who I am.
Just not knowing courtroom etiquette. That's the last thing I can remember.
I've been gotten a lot on this podcast, but I embrace it. I like it. I'm just the average guy. I'm the everyman. Yeah. This is a podcast for the everyman.
It is. We have some news, Ready Player One review, and a nostalgia segment, top 10 movies that shaped your childhood. But first, we have a lot of housekeeping things today. Got two winners to announce. First up, the Fantasy Movie League winner. That's right. We finally have a winner in the Fantasy Movie League because all the movies that mattered have kind of had their run end. We weren't able to upload this online because the formulas were getting all messed up. So when we do a future Fantasy Movie League thing, we'll figure out a better way to do it. But we have a winner. It was like 900 people did this. We did it all the way back in October, maybe? Forgot when we did it. But the winner is PepperSmith67 on Twitter.
He Ooh. Won with
2,365,107,858. But he did something incredibly impressive. He did not have Star Wars, Thor Ragnarok, or Justice League. No comic book movies, no Star Wars. He had Jumanji, which made almost $1 billion, Coco, The Greatest Showman, Three Billboards, and Lady Bird. Jumanji was the second highest grossing movie in this Fantasy Movie League with $944 million. Only 33 people picked Jumanji. That's it. Out of the 800 to 900. I forget what the exact number. Hold on. Let me see here. I'll scroll all the way down to the bottom. It's 835. Ended up being
in this. Good for Pepper Smith, 67.
Ken Jack, you came in 812th.
Not surprising.
What'd I come in at?
You came in 155th, and I came in 14th.
Damn, dude. Good for you. Big time movie
place,
boy.
Second place was Reginald Jansen, but he didn't win. Pepper Smith, you won. Congratulations. I think what we should do is maybe the week of Infinity War, we do a thing where everyone predicts the final box office number for Infinity War. That might be fun. So it's one number, and it's hard to have like a tie because people are going to get it down to the exact dollars. That might be what we do. We'll see. The next thing we have to announce, the winner of the ESPN Tournament Challenge, the Lights, Camera, Podcast Group, Villanova won the national championship last night. Dan Kell, D-A-N-K-E-L, 2991. He had 1,360 points. He had Nova over Michigan. He had three of the four Final Four teams, didn't have Loyola. He also only had three Elite Eight teams. So that just shows you right there. It all comes down to the Final Four and who you pick in the title game. So congratulations. I don't know who that is. Please contact us. Don't know how to get a hold of you. DM us on Twitter, and we'll get to you about your prize on that one. We did our Disney Pixar bracket. Toy Story won in a landslide, 70% of the vote over Lion King in the final. So our bracket, our listeners say the best Disney Pixar movie is Toy Story. As of right now, we already launched our Marvel bracket, favorite Avengers Infinity War character. So that's there in the description below. You can vote for that and the Infinity War Death Pool as well. Woo! Those are all of our contests. Fun stuff. Follow us on Instagram at Lights Camera Pod, Twitter as well, same handle, and then of course our Reddit. You got to, if you're not on Reddit with us, you got to get on Reddit. We do a lot there that we don't do on Twitter. We have a lot of discussions and we put out some surveys and polls that you don't see on Twitter because it's a little exclusive there for the Reddit community. r/LightsCameraPodcast. Definitely join in on that. I think our Reddit is the best place to be for us in terms of content. I think even more so than Twitter.
I like the Reddit. I check it every day. Even though I don't post every day, I'm on there checking it, just lurking.
Yeah, it's fun. You get to talk a little bit more long form, and everyone loves long form. No one likes everything to be short and sweet and to the point. Everyone likes it to be like 500 words a piece.
Yeah, just novels. Exactly.
We're pivoting to video soon, so that'd be nice.
Yeah, we are. Pivot comes soon. News time. First up, Woody Harrelson potentially going to be playing Carnage in the Venom movie with Tom Hardy. Are we buttering to Woody Harrelson being in the Spider-Man spinoff, the Venom movie? I'm buttering hard on this, and it sounded like our listeners on Twitter were buttering very hard to this one as well.
Yeah, this I love Woody, dude. I've been a little tepid on Carnage in the past just because I think Venom's a knockoff Spider-Man, and I think Carnage is a knockoff Venom, so it's like a twice Xerox superhero. But yeah, I mean, Woody Harrelson, man. Can't beat that. The only thing that took me by surprise is we've already seen somewhat of a trailer, a maybe disappointing trailer to some people, but we've seen a trailer come out and we're just now getting around to saying maybe Woody Harrelson is going to be in this movie. Did they just film scenes for the trailer?
I don't know. It is weird.
Yeah. It seems like this movie should be pretty much done, right? Unless it's like a final 2 minute I'm Carnage sort of teaser.
Hey, I'm Carnage. I think Woody Harrelson's a great villain. I think he's really good as a three-dimensional villain. So one of my favorite roles he was in recently was as the bad guy in War for Planet of the Apes, where it's just like a more than just like a one-dimensional bad guy, where it's just like, I'm just bad. I'm evil. And so I was excited at first, and then I read more on Carnage, which I didn't really know much about. And like his biography goes, he was psychopath, like child who killed his dog, and his mom, after he killed his dog, tried to kill him, and his dad, upon seeing his mom trying to kill him, beat the shit out of his mom until she died, and then like he went to jail. And I'm like, okay, this is a little too much for Spider-Man, especially, or sorry, for any setting in the Spider-Man universe, really. But I don't really want this anything involved. I don't want Carnage as a bad guy in this, even though it's going to be obviously a little bit darker than Spider-Man Homecoming. But I don't know, just not my thing.
Not into it. Yeah, that is pretty dark, especially for anything Marvel-wise. But this is different. It's not the Disney MCU. This is, well, actually, apparently Spider-Man's going to be in it, so maybe it is loosely connected, which is tough. I think it remains to be seen how well or how much it is connected. But it sounds like Woody Harrelson is going to play Carnage in a movie that comes out in the fall. Venom, we've seen one very brief trailer. Another piece of news, not comic book worthy. Comic book worthy? Not comic book related. There you go. That's what I meant to say. Creed 2. The synopsis has been released. Filming has started on Creed 2. I'll read the synopsis. Life has become a balancing act for Adonis Creed. Between personal obligations and training for his next big fight, he is up against the challenge of his life. Facing an opponent with ties to his family's past only intensifies his impending battle in the ring. Rocky Balboa is there by his side through it all, and together, Rocky and Adonis will confront their shared legacy, question what's worth fighting for, and discover that nothing's more important than family. Creed 2 is about going back to basics to rediscover what made you a champion in the first place, and remembering that no matter where you go, you can't escape your history. Nothing in that is surprising at all. That's what we expected, but I am excited for Creed.
Yeah, and Ryan Coogler is on this as an executive producer, I want to say. So he's involved too, yeah, he's not
writing
or directing it, but he's still involved. Love the first Creed. So I got high hopes for this one. I think it'll be fun. I like the idea of Ivan Drago's son. Is it his son or his grandson? I think it's his son.
I think it's son, right? Yeah.
Hadn't been that long. Jeez, I know I'm old, but come on, guys. Yeah, I mean, what does he have to balance, though? Is he just, like, famous now? So he has to balance the fame? Is he just like, I can't keep up with all my Instagram direct messages?
That's like, my maybe Jordan in real life, for sure.
I'd love to see a scene where fucking Rocky is, like, trying to use Instagram or Snapchat, and he's like, hey, how do you fucking use this? See, little joke there.
Maybe he's really like busy. He played Killmonger. Like, they just tied into actual Michael B. Jordan. He was just busy filming a movie as a villain.
Oh, I can't wait for all the Killmonger Creed crossover memes now that will come out of this.
Oh, yeah, there will. A lot of the Hey Auntie thing will be like Hey Rocky, something like that. You know, people will do that.
Yeah. Rocky IV was my personal favorite Rocky, so I'm curious to see how they do it. It's like they said in the article, though, Rocky IV is a little bit campy compared to the rest of the franchise, I guess. And Creed was really dramatic. So it's like, I don't know. It's interesting to see how they're going to mix that up. But I'm excited for it. Mega buttered on this. Love Michael B. Jordan. Like our boy Dolph Lundgren a ton. Yeah, I think the last thing I saw him in, though, was like the 20th Universal Soldier movie. So I'm glad to see him get more work.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, video game movies are usually never good. And I'm shocked they're not bringing back Michael Fassbender. But I think Creed 2.
Fucking asshole. That movie was so ass. I'm still so pissed off about that.
That was a slow burn.
It's like hip teen speak for Assassin's Creed. It's like, is your kids talking about Assassin's Creed? The Creed. Referencing Assassin's Creed. Using a sentence. Do you want to play some Creed?
Creed 2 slated for release next year, I believe. I don't know. Look it up.
2019. Hey, yeah, I'm Rocky. Hey. It's me. Hey, somebody tell my brother to stop tweeting.
Back to comic book movies. John Krasinski, the guy that played Pam's boyfriend on The Office, he was almost Captain America. Really funny story he actually told about that, where he saw Chris Hemsworth walk by in Thor costume or something and was like, ah, no, this is not for me. That's before Krasinski was like ripped for his role in the Benghazi movie, which he also starred in with Roy from The Office. But John Krasinski would like to play, he said, Mr. Fantastic if the Fantastic Four reboot happens, because it'll happen under the MCU in theory if Disney buying 21st Century Fox does go through. So what do you think about John Krasinski playing Mr. Fantastic? I would like to see him trial for a comic book movie. He's riding high right now because A Quiet Place is opening up this weekend and we're going to review it next week, and it is getting insane reviews. I'm not sure it's going to get up to the level of Get Out, like the impact that it has, but it could be another horror movie in the early part of the year that might last throughout the year into award season. But Krasinski is Mr. Fantastic, and do you even want them to try again with Fantastic Four?
I don't really want them to try again with Fantastic Four, and it doesn't even have anything to do with the movies, even though they were hot garbage. I'm not a big Fantastic Four fan. They kind of bore me. All their superpowers are pretty lame. One guy's a rock.
I don't want to see them make it anymore, but that said, who else has better experience stretching things past where they should naturally stop than John Krasinski? So the perfect Mr. Fantastic.
Ken Jack writes office digs in his sleep.
I could easily. It's my funnest Twitter gag is just making you say one bad thing about The Office, you get 20 people mad. It's amazing. It's like a hydra.
I mean, it is a good situation for you because you have stated you do enjoy the show. So you're just there enjoying the show, but also pissing people off at the same time.
That's America, baby.
I am excited about Quiet Place, though.
Me too.
It's looking. I didn't have any expectations for it, which was nice. It looked interesting, but I was ready for it to be bad, and I was ready for it to be good. And it's good to see that it's getting great reviews, guys.
It's still at 100%, 52 reviews, 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Kenjek and I, we can't say anything bad about it because when we rail on horror movies, we always say that quiet and silence builds tension most. So, hey, this is perfect. Literally, quiet is in the title. But also, we're going to be reviewing Blockers next week, and Blockers is being called one of the better comedies of the last 5 years or so, even maybe the last decade. That's crazy. But it's at 88% around Tomatoes, and apparently it's really funny. So,
Ca-caw, Blockers. Just
there you go.
Official pronunciation.
I apologize.
I'm excited for the husband and wife on-screen duo team up. I think that's a cool concept. And I think that, you know, with the somber news of Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan Tatum breaking up, splitting up, or divorcing, or whatever they're doing, I think John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, they might be in my new power couple.
That's fair. Yeah, both very talented.
Famous for a lot of roles. I might ship them.
It's a good term. It's a young people's term. Really cool. Last bit of news, staying in comic books. I like this news. This was pretty cool. I feel like I heard this, but I wasn't sure about it, but I saw the story, and it's neat. James Gunn apparently wrote Infinity War dialogue for the Guardians characters. I think that's awesome. Like, that is how you do a crossover this big. Like, you don't let the people doing the movie take over the property that really aren't theirs. Because the Russo brothers, they wrote some funny stuff in some of the Captain America movies, but the James Gunn humor played perfectly with Guardians. So I'm a big fan of this. I'm really glad. And I hope a couple of the other directors, like Ryan Coogler, maybe had an opportunity to share some influence. And it sounded like they did. So this is really great news, and it just hypes me up even more for Infinity War.
I like it, man. I'm telling you, Disney and Marvel, they are masters of getting this down to a science, and this is part of it. It's that consistency between all the brands, and they're not going to change the Guardians up. They're going to have their own personality, and the personality comes from James Gunn, so it's good to see.
Yeah, I'm totally in on this as well. I think this is great because the Guardians, out of all the Marvel franchises, I think is the most separate from the rest of the Marvel universe. So I think it's going to help their interactions be a little bit more organic than they would have been otherwise if it was just Russo brothers doing it.
Yeah, and I think they're probably some of the hardest to write for too, just because it's like that specific wry comedy is tough to execute in those types of movies. And so it's why some people didn't really like Thor, even though I like Thor.
The thing about this movie is, and we talked about a few weeks ago, is that I don't think I've ever been this hyped for a movie. And it's growing more and more. Like, I was hyped for Star Wars, Phantom Menace as a kid, and Force Awakens, Last Jedi. But I don't know. It's just something about the payoff of waiting all these years for this movie, knowing this is going to happen. I've now seen the trailer in theaters twice. Ken Jack and I saw it when we saw Ready Player One. I saw it when I saw Ready Player One again. And, man, it's just awesome. So any bit of news really pumps me up.
I'm kind of hyped for it. I don't think I'm as hyped as you guys are, though. I don't think I'm as big of an Avengers guy as you guys are.
I think, I see that. And it's not that you don't like it, but I think Ken Jack and I are definitely the bigger MCU for sure. Fans.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you guys bought your pre-sale tickets, and I'm just going to waddle on into the theater.
Get yourself a Bavarian legend.
2,000 calories, dude. I was thinking about it. Dude. I was thinking about it. I texted you guys. I'm like, I'm going to get a Bavarian legend on the way out. And then I walk by and I'm like, I don't want to be the dude who orders a Bavarian legend and they have to call it in to be wheelbarrowed out from the fucking back of the AMC.
Because, I mean, the funny thing is you have to call it a Bavarian legend because you're not going to say, oh, I want the big pretzel. Like, that just sounds stupid. So you got to say, get the Bavarian legend.
Well, we actually... my wife and I, sick brag, but we went to a movie a couple weeks ago and she wanted a pretzel. So she's like, let's just get the Bavarian legend and split it. I'm like, okay. And the guy fucking warned her. Like, he's like, are you aware of how big the Bavarian legend is? It's like the size of a steering wheel. And she's like, oh, we'll just get the pretzel bites then. I'm like, well, way to sell the Bavarian legend. You guys should be like excited to get these things out of like AMC just so you have more storage space in the back for your Avengers cups.
Oh man, the Bavarian legend. One day, Ken Jack knows. I almost got it when we went 2 weeks ago, but couldn't do it.
That also, was the temptation of Christ, basically watching you like battle with yourself on whether or not you wanted the Bavarian legend at that AMC.
I was thinking so hard during the entirety of Ready Player One about if I was going to get the Bavarian legend on the way out or not. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to put it in the trunk of my car and take a photo like I was leaving Home Depot and I just got this big ass pretzel up into the bed of my truck or SUV or whatever you want to call it, Toyota.
Here's a challenge. Any of our listeners, if you're going to get a Bavarian legend, please tweet us a picture of the Bavarian legend. You eating the Bavarian legend. We had a Twitter user, and I'm sorry, I don't know the name off the top of my head, but we did retweet him. He gave a review of a movie, I think Ready Player One, after he saw it, in a Lights, Camera, Pod t-shirt. We encourage that as well. But the Bavarian legend challenge, starting it now. If you go to an AMC, buy that thing. Show it to us. Show it off. We'll retweet any Bavarian legend photos.
Let's make this weekend Bavarian legend weekend.
Okay.
Okay. And like so that. this is the weekend I'm going to go in. What's our movie next week? Isle of Dogs.
It's two movies. Quiet Place and Blocker and Cacao Blocker.
Oh, Cacao Blockers. Yeah, we're going to give Isle of Dogs a little more time to get into civilization. But or not civilization, I guess I should say. You city folks have had it for a while. But I'm going to go in and I'm going to see Cacao Blockers and I'm going to order that big ass Bavarian legend. I'm going to tweet out a pic of that.
I like that. It's two Bavarian movies. Legend week. I'm a big fan of that. Let's get German
Bavarian
actors on
legend too. Weekend. Can't be the whole week. It's a weekend.
Two movies. So a lot of you are all going to be going to see two movies between now and our next Thursday episode. So you got time. Buy the legend.
Let's get German actors on for that interview too. Like get Christoph Waltz. I know you guys have his number.
What if it really was like a legend in Germany? Like a fucking, they don't speak of it. They're like, oh, the Bavarian legend exists in America. Some have fabled that you can buy it, but once you buy it, you'll never leave the toilet for 12 hours.
Schrodinger's legend. Bavarian legend.
Yeah, you just took something that was German and kind of attached it to that.
Sounded right.
Wow.
It's better than my jokes tonight, dude. I've been throwing some real fucking stinkers across the plate.
Nah, you're good. I'm looking at a picture right now, though, of the Bavarian legend.
Is it
holy
thick?
Shit.
There's
there's a woman baking it and she's holding a box that it comes in and it's 3/4 the size of like a Domino's pizza box.
Oh my God.
It is huge. I'm going to send it to you guys right now. We'll get a live reaction. Bad radio, whatever.
They fucking had to transport it in one of those trucks that they transport all the power windmills in. It comes in three pieces to the AMC theater and they have to fuse it together in the storage room.
It is huge.
You bite into it, there's a fucking family of rats living in it.
Oh, man.
You guys might already know this. I'm not a fan of pretzels.
What a shock.
What about Philadelphia pretzels? Because Philadelphia pretzels are a little bit different.
Oh, dude.
Philadelphia soft pretzels are a little bit better, in my opinion. Damn, that is a big-ass pretzel, dude. It comes in a pizza box?
Yeah.
Jesus.
So crazy.
This lady looks very happy to be getting this Bavarian legend out of her life.
I just saw a picture of Niki Lauda eating the pretzel. Hold on.
Dude, you know there's some like analyst at AMC headquarters who's in the food and drink side of the house whose like sole responsibility is to track Bavarian legend sales.
Oh, for sure.
And he's like, boss, we moved 300 BLs this week. Oh, good. Let's get to 350.
The Bavarian legend. Damn, I'm actually going to ask when we're next in our local theater how many of those they typically sell. That's ridiculous. I can see now Kendrick showing us a Bavarian legend sandwich. That is so huge. All right, enough talking about pretzel pictures.
No, wait. I want to talk about this some more.
Okay, keep going.
Never mind. Why have a big-ass pretzel? Why not just a regular-sized pretzel? I don't get it.
That sounds like an argument you've made more common than not. Why big size? Regular size can be good too. I promise.
Yeah, but this is a really big pretzel, dude, and they have pretzel bites and nothing in between. There's pretzel bites and the biggest pretzel in the world.
It's kind of like if they did the popcorn, just the huge tub and then just the kid size. Like, there really is, you're right, there is no in between. Like, you either get the nuggets, which, I mean, they're not that great of pretzels, those pretzel nuggets. Like, they're pretty standard run of the mill. And the Bavarian Legend's like a real baked pretzel. So, like, if you want the baked pretzel, you got to go with the huge one.
Yeah, dude, I love the curves of the soft pretzel. Like, that's the most tender part of it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't get that with the pretzel bites. But you're right. It's probably one of those sales tactics where they're just like, you either get the really small one and look like a pathetic man, or you fucking put this in your backpack and break off pieces while you watch the movie.
Hashtag not sponsored.
Yeah.
Way. Now, hashtag not yet sponsored.
It's a very free ad.
Come on, AMC.
Dude, all right, AMC is going to love it this weekend when we tag AMC and all the Bavarian Legend weekend posts.
Free ads. Are you done, though, Trill, on the Bavarian, or are we anything else?
Yeah, we got to put this to bed. I could talk about this legend of a pretzel for hours.
What a legend. All right, that's news.
Now, one more thing on the... No, okay. I'm just fucking with you.
I actually had something to say before we went into the next segment. Damn it. No, I forgot.
What's the deal with the Bavarian legend? You got the pretzel bites and you got the big pretzel, but there's nothing in between.
What about the stone-fired pizza? Flatbread pizza.
George, she got the Bavarian legend, George. She got the Bavarian legend. You can't just get a Bavarian legend.
They do serve flatbreads. You are right. Who's getting the flatbreads? That's weird.
Yeah, I'm very much against protein-based food in a movie theater.
I had someone bring fucking Chipotle into one of the theaters I went into like 2 weeks ago. Like a whole ass burrito, just eating it arms up during the previews.
That's messy too.
Yeah, I know.
That'll create a little mess there. Let's move on. Ready Player One. We're going to review it. Spoilers and non-spoilers. It's the nostalgia episode of Lights, Camera, Podcast. We'll be right back.
Trill Ballin's customer number 33505. He's had every menu item at AMC, but has yet to purchase the Bavarian Legend. How can you expect him to purchase the Bavarian Legend? He has no allegiances. He has no alliances when it comes to these food items. He's pushed hard enough, he'll get the Bavarian Legend. We'll make him his next time to the theater. He'll purchase it. There's 2,000 calories in the Bavarian Legend. So much gluten, and you know he has a bad gallbladder. This is crazy. Hi, sir. Welcome to AMC. What can I get for you?
Can I get one ticket to Ready Player One and, give me one Bavarian Legend, please? You can't fight the
friction. Oh, God. There's so much gluten here. Oh, man. I really gotta go. I told you there was too much gluten in the Bavarian Legend. Look what you've done.
My God. He's a rogue agent without any alliances. He's gonna destroy our bathroom.
You can't fight the friction.
Welcome back to Lights, Camera, Podcast, reviewing Ready Player One. First up, the non-spoiler section. We've been talking about this movie for quite some time now. It is the nostalgia-packed, reference-packed movie that everyone is talking about. And is apparently, well, was apparently a better movie than people thought it would be. And we saw it, and the three of us liked it a fair amount. Trill Ballins, we tweeted out your score, but remind everyone what you gave Ready Player One.
I gave Ready Player One an 85, Jeff. Would you like me to go into more detail, or should we save that?
No, give a quick hit.
Yeah, it was a blast all the way through. Ready Player One, more like Ready Player Fun. Did you guys hear about the sequel? Ready Player Two? Okay. Yeah, no, seriously, though, I love making fun of this movie because in some ways I'm making fun of myself because half of my Twitter account is just references to things from the 90s. And I'm a big sucker for the 90s nostalgia. And there's been a lot of it and a whole lot of it actually in the last couple of years. And it's probably going to get worse. But if you move past that, if you move past the ridiculousness of the concept and the ridiculousness of some of the excerpts from the book, you're left with a movie that is not complicated, It's not complex and it's not convoluted, but it's really fun to watch. It's easy to digest. And I liked it a lot. I don't know if I loved it. I think 90s love category, but it was fun, dude.
Ken Jack, you saw it obviously in IMAX with me. You liked it as well. Remind everyone what you gave Ready Player One.
I gave an 82. The movie felt really stretched out and sort of surface level, but it was still all in all a really fun time. I went into it sort of expecting to be smacked over the face like 20,000 times with references, but it definitely wasn't as heavy-handed as that. You don't get bored at any point, so if you go into it expecting to be entertained, you won't be disappointed at all. But if you expect a greater message or anything like that, I think you might be disappointed.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. I gave it, I think, the highest out of all of us. I did, 86. I really enjoyed it. A little weird for me, though, because I feel like I have more negative things to say than positive things. But it was such a good time that I just couldn't rate it any lower than that. I mean, it may drop down a couple points, maybe 2 or 3 points, depending on what I see the rest of the year. There's a lot of recency bias with my ratings, especially early in the year, because it's few and far between that you see pretty decent movies when you watch as many as we do. I gave it an 86 out of 100. The listener score was at an 87 the other day, but it's now down to an 80. So the listeners give Ready Player One an 80, which is actually pretty high for the listeners. You guys are pretty tough graders. So Ready Player One, 85 from Trill. Ken Jack gave it an 82. I gave it an 86. The listeners gave it an 80 out of 100. Couple more non-spoiler things we got to get into. I'll throw one out there right away. This is a corny-ass movie. It is a cheese fest. And this is my initial reaction when I left the theater was, I liked it, but this is one of the more obvious movies I've seen in a long time that you're just like, I can totally see why someone would hate this movie. Like, it is very obvious why somebody would hate the shit out of this movie. It's corny, it's cheesy, and if you don't connect with pop culture, this is, I mean, stay away. This is not the movie for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just pop culture. It's like a specific period of time pop culture. Like the 80s through the 90s pop culture. And you're right, it is corny. The Zemeckis cube is probably the most corny thing of the movie. I don't think that's a spoiler because everyone knows the Zemeckis cube. I didn't mind references when you just saw Master Chief, for example, or when you saw Watto at the beginning. The stuff that did make me roll my eyes was the stuff like the Zemeckis cube. Or the montage where he's trying to dress up to go out on a date to this weird techno air dancing club where it's just like boom, reference. And it's kind of like, hey, did you get that one? But I kind of like that because it makes me feel like I'm connected to the movie in a very superficial way. And I'm a very superficial movie goer. But there's no greater substance here. The message of the movie, and Ken Jack said there wasn't a message. And I think effectively there wasn't, but I think the message they tried to say at the end was that technology is great, but sometimes you got to take a break from it. And maybe we can go into the ending, but that was just kind of like one of those Facebook messages where like you see somebody in the ocean and the ocean's their phone and they're trapped in a boat on it. And it's like, oh, bro, it really makes me think. It's like Banksy or some shit like that.
Yeah, we'll get into the ending and spoilers because it's very Spielberg-y, very Spielberg-y. Like the post and Ready Player One have very similar endings in terms of like what they do at the end. But we'll get into that in spoilers. We can talk about the cast real quick. Ty Sheridan played the lead, Parzival, and his real name is Wade Watts. Olivia Cook was the other protagonist, and she was in a sense a co-lead, though I'm sure in the billing supporting actress. I thought she was great. I thought Ty Sheridan was okay. I thought she was better than he was in terms of acting. I thought her character was far more engaging and like believable. But I also thought her character was written a little better too. Like she clearly had a reason why she hated that place, where Wade Watts, you're kind of like, huh? Like, okay, I get you hate the establishment, but it wasn't as fleshed out as I hoped it was. Ben Mendelsohn was in it. He was the villain. I thought he was a little underwritten, though he's always a good villain and he plays the same villain in every movie, basically. Mm-hmm.
Because that was like the ultimate callback, because he was essentially like that principal from Breakfast Club type villain. He was like your standard boilerplate John Hughes 80 movie villain, where the only reason he's evil is because he's old.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, that's a good point. Simon Pegg's in it. I won't talk about him in the non-spoiler section because there's something I want to talk about with Simon Pegg. Who else? Mark Rylance plays the guy that created the Oasis, James Halliday. And then, of course, TJ Miller's in it. And that's all we'll say about that.
I rock.
Yeah.
Actually, when he started speaking, there was a lady three rows behind me who was like, that's TJ Miller.
That's Chappie.
That's, like, yes, you're right. That is
Chappie's the movie. Chappie's in this thing.
He makes God the cut. Damn. He did great, too. I didn't notice him, but he, I mean, I guess that's part of his role. Chappie is like the unsung hero.
What else in non-spoilers? We said it's corny. We said it's cheesy. What about the references? How in your face did you think the references were? Was it more or less than you expected? Because for me, it was less, but then there were some moments that it's like, hey, check this out. This is a reference.
See, I think it was a lot less than everyone would have expected, at least me. I thought it was going to be like bashed over your face, like, hey, look, that's Master Chief. Hey, look, that's an Iron Giant, which is actually a line in the movie, but they do that a lot less than I thought they would. It's more like they just show it on screen. You see like a visual cue or you see an audio cue of something, but they don't point it out as often as they thought they would. And that was my major sort of hesitation going into it. So I was really pleasantly pleased with that.
Yeah, I think it had the right mix of references. And you're right, they didn't call everything out, which thank God they didn't, because it would have been even more cringy than the Zemeckis cube. But when they did call it out, it was a little like, you know, we know who the Iron Giant is, right? That's the Iron Giant. Yeah, it's the Iron Giant. Like, yeah, I get it. There's a Gundam reference in there too, which I guess was okay. I mean, maybe even if they did call him out, it wouldn't have bothered me that much just because that's what I was prepared for. But it wasn't as in your face as those fucking movie posters were. Like, once I saw those movie posters, like, it gave me a little bit of pause because I'm thinking, oh boy, strap in, it's going to be like all these references. And it wasn't a hammer to your head in all aspects, in some aspects, but not all.
So let's get into spoilers, and I'll splice in where to jump ahead spoiler wise. To avoid spoilers for Ready Player One, please skip ahead to 101.07. Okay, so spoilers for Ready Player One. We can get into it now. I do want to say the Zemeckis cube, you talked about that. Obviously, Robert Zemeckis, the guy who did Back to the Future, that was the whole point. And it's a Rubik's Cube, and he shuffles the Rubik's Cube in a nightclub when they're being shot at, and it turns time back like Back to the Future. But they play that Back to the Future jingle. I'll play it right here. They play that thing the entire movie. Like, there's a lot of Back to the Future in this movie. And it's actually not referenced at all directly. I don't think they say Back to the Future once. She calls, Olivia Cooke's character calls Parzival McFly. Yeah, McFly at one point. But otherwise, there's not a lot of direct references to Back to the Future. I mean, they never even note that it's the DeLorean that he drives. But that's just one little piece of information. All right, what's the first spoiler thing you want to get into? Do you want to get into the ending now?
Let's talk a little bit about the love story, because I think that was the part that I maybe didn't like the most. And let me tell you why. So the first thing is Olivia Cooke's character, Artemis. What's the main character's name again? Parzival. Wade Watts Parzival meets her in the Oasis, and you know, she's pink haired, avatar of a character, and they're in a race, and then they meet and have a little meet cute in the race, and they kind of start working together, and he finds out she's working with greater intentions. Then they go to this nightclub to kind of try to uncover these keys, and he basically on the second date says, I love you, which is insane for one thing, because it's like the second time they've met. And then the other thing is, it's like not the real person. And they make the joke that it could be like a 400 pound dude in a basement, which is like your standard internet joke, kind of maybe true. That was like, I guess, necessary for the movie, because it's 2 hours long and you got to move the movie along somehow. But it felt really forced, and it made me really not like the Parzival character, just because his only motivation at that point was like winning the affection of Artemis. Now he kind of grows and, you know, understands her cause, and they, you know, she reveals her background and that her parents were or dad was killed in one of these IOI facilities, yeah, and he fights on her side. But it seemed rushed, and I don't love that like whole aspect of like, I just met you, but I love you. And but to the credit of the screenwriters, like, it's not like she fell for it immediately. Like, eventually she did, I guess. And the other thing I didn't like, it was kind of like the she's the one syndrome, where she has a birthmark over her eye, and you know, they made a line about her like being self-conscious about it, and like, he doesn't mind it, like it's some big deal to get over, but like, she's, you know, obviously a very attractive young woman, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. So that was kind of a cliche that I'm like, 2018, you know, I don't know. It just seems very, very unrealistic, which I know applying unrealistic to this movie is bad because it's one of the more unrealistic movies I've ever seen, but it was cringy. Let me just put it that way. So I wasn't expecting maybe it to be more realistic, but maybe a little less cringy, because at those parts I was kind of like, oh, dude, like this love story just doesn't flow or feel right.
The thing that you mentioned with her character is that I think she is fleshed out. You mentioned that, you know, they talk about her parents dying, or at least her father dying in the loyalty facility after like he had debt and all that. And that's what they do. The IOI, they buy people's debt and they basically imprison them until they can either pay it back or they die. And I thought that was great that they fleshed her character out, because I understood her issues, and she was very enraged about Wade and like, Parzival, you know, do you take this seriously when he reveals his name and says, I love you? Like, this is bigger than just trying to win a game. And for his character, you know, he confronts Ben Mendelsohn's character. What's Ben Mendelsohn's character name again? Yeah, so he plays Nolan Sorrento, and I didn't think he was that well fleshed out. I thought that they mentioned briefly, like Wade Watts mentioned it briefly, and Samantha Cook. Actually, it was weird that her name was Samantha Cook and her real name is Olivia Cook in real life. That for some reason bothered me. But I guess, I mean, you can't change what the source material is. But they mention how Sorrento once worked with James Halliday, who created the Oasis, and they said like, oh, he lied and said, you know, he was close to him, but he really never was. All he knew was his latte order. And they have this kind of backstory a little bit, but all you really kind of get is that Sorrento wants to take over the Oasis and make people pay for it. And you see a quick flashback scene where he pitches to Halliday like how they should have a tiered payment system, but you don't really totally get his motives and his background. So I thought that was a little weak, a little underwritten. And then the same thing with Parzival, aka Wade Watts. Like, he alludes to the fact that his family didn't make it through like the corn syrup shortages and the bandwidth riots, but you don't really get his motivations. Maybe he has none, and that's kind of the point. I don't know. I felt like they were both a little underwritten for how important they were in the movie, especially in comparison to Artemis / Samantha Cook, because she was pretty well fleshed out compared to the other two.
Yeah, so one of my biggest problems with this movie is probably that exact lack of progression. It feels like they devoted so much time to character development, but no one really developed whatsoever. And the three characters of Watts and H and Artemis, to me, it just felt like a virtual version of like Harry, Ron, and Hermione in Harry Potter, in that Watts is just the unwavering, one-dimensional hero who's never tempted by evil whatsoever. H is just the comic relief there on the side. And then Artemis is like the refined know-it-all brains of the group. And like, that's just that. Like, there's nothing deeper to any of them. And that said, I thought the action was still well-paced and the effects were awesome. But the individual performances, I feel, were sort of adversely affected by that lack of depth to all the characters.
Yeah, and I think lack of depth, for me, I don't mind a lack of depth as long as there's not a love story. And that's why I go back to that point, because I feel like when you have a love story, there has to be motivations from like the other, you know, characters in the, you know, duo or trio or however many people are in love with each other. And Parzival just didn't really have any. He just like met this avatar online and fell in love with her. And that's really what made me cringe. And that was my biggest part of the movie. And I don't know if you can take that out, because that also is like the standard boilerplate template for any 80s movie. There's always that hokey ass love story, love, you know, connection added to it. So it's part of it and it's part of the book. So whatever. But other than that, I didn't really have any major complaints with anything else, because I took everything at face value. Jeff, you talked about Ben Mendelsohn's character, Nolan Sorrento. I didn't mind that he was two-dimensional because, like I said, he was like a caricature of an 80s villain. He didn't have any, he didn't have to have a motivation. He was just a bad guy and you knew it. The action was great. The thing I want to talk about now is my favorite scene of the movie, and probably a lot of people's favorite scenes of the movie, was the Shining scene. And Jeff, you want to dive into that? Because I think those type of scenes, which, you know, this isn't a novel concept of a movie, one, because it's based off of a book, and two, because it has so many references and plays off other things. But having a movie set within a movie that is so realistic to the original movie was something I'm having a hard time remembering. And I did really, really enjoy that because it was so well done.
Yeah, and I want to say, wrapping up on actors, Mark Rylance I thought was pretty great as James Halliday, the inventor of the Oasis. I liked, like, he had that, captured that, like, that nerd essence that they wanted. But the Shining scene is the second challenge where they try to go find one of the keys that are hidden that can help them get to the Easter egg. And our audience reacted more to that than anything else in the movie. People were laughing, like, oh, this is great, and it looks so cool. I mean, it was an exact replica of The Shining. I don't know if it was a set or if they did CGI. I would imagine it was CGI. Like, that would be my guess. But it looked amazing. It was recreated well. H, who was played by Lena Waithe, that how you say her name?
It's Waithe or Waithe. I don't know how to pronounce it. But
she was awesome as H. And who you don't know is actually a woman until the end, played by her character's name is Helen Harrison. Her avatar is H, who's a man, who's, I thought, was a pretty fun character. But he had never seen The Shining, or she had never seen The Shining, so she had no idea what she was walking into. She saw the two little girls, and she went into the bathroom. And you don't actually see Jack Nicholson's character, but you see the axe come through. So it was a really cool recreation of that, and probably the best reference or flashback at all in that movie. I mean, that was very well done, as you said, Tro. It was easily, I think, the standout moment of the movie. Besides Simon Pegg's American accent, I think The Shining was the standout moment from the movie.
Yeah, it really made me wish they did another one of those. Like, they maybe went into three movies for each of the three challenges, just because I loved it so much. I don't know if it would lose that particular effect, but that challenge was definitely the coolest looking challenge and had the best feel to it. It was just it was a novel concept. It felt like a novel concept in a movie that wasn't really supposed to be a novel concept, which is why I enjoyed it.
The third challenge, they were just playing old Atari video games, and they went to the one adventure which had the first ever Easter egg, and it made sense. So I'm not going to criticize that part of it, but I do wish, and I actually thought as the movie was progressing, like, oh, I bet the last one is going to be a movie as well, like Back to the Future or something, but it wasn't. So you're right, I would have liked to have seen that. The first challenge, I want to get into this because a bunch of reviews I've seen brought this up. Red Letter Media brought this up in their review, which I was dying laughing at, and I thought the same thing leaving it. The first challenge, Wade eventually figures out, oh, you have to go backwards, because he watches old footage where James Halliday says to Simon Pegg's character, Ogden Morrow, like, I wish you could just put your foot to the pedal and go backwards as fast as you can. And he figures out you win the challenge by going backwards, which was pretty cool. However, like, they've been trying that race for 5 years or something, and nobody figured it out. And this is 2045. There is no way, like, YouTube or Reddit or someone would have figured that out. Like, gamers nowadays, if fucking Ninja, our Fortnite guy, would have been in the Oasis, he would have figured out to go backwards in about 30 seconds. That was like the one thing I'm like, I get why they did it, but I'm like, there had to have been a better way. I know that's very nerdy to get into it like that, but if it's 2045, come on, someone's figuring that shit out right away.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe my suspension of disbelief kind of took care of that. That really didn't bother me all that much. It's funny to think about. And yeah, realistically, you're probably right. It would have been solved within 4 minutes of it being in the game. But the racing was pretty cool. I did like that particular sequence. I liked the Bigfoot truck that H was driving. The DeLorean looked really cool. Like, the CGI was very well done, which I think it had to be for this type of movie that was 90% CGI characters. So yeah, I mean, there's little points here and there, but overall, most of the scenes are enjoyable. You go back to the Atari, that was something that I get why they had to do that, but that felt anticlimactic to some extent, compared to the Shining scene that preceded it in terms of getting that second key, the Jade key or whatever it was.
Let's wrap up, and Kendrick, you can throw some in here because I have a SpongeBob question for you. I know you're a big SpongeBob guy. Well, let's talk about some Easter eggs. Anything you saw that you really liked? But I saw on the second pass the paddy wagon with SpongeBob and Patrick in the first race. That was one of my favorite Easter eggs. I don't know why. I just like seeing SpongeBob in there. But any Easter eggs that stuck out for you guys that you liked or disliked besides Watto, which was not in the fucking movie, by the way. But like, we'll agree to disagree, I guess, Trill. But anyone that you like to have seen in there that you might have actually picked for your Oasis character, some of them were awful. I'm like, okay, who would ever pick that? You would never be that character. But in terms of Easter eggs, what did you like?
I mean, Ryu from Street Fighter was in the race sequence. Did you guys see him?
Saw Chun-Li.
Yep.
Yes, Chun-Li was like, I think, running. Was it running next to Master Chief in one of the battles?
They do Hadouken at one point. One of them does.
That was kind of cringy.
That was cringy, but Chun-Li fighting alongside Master Chief wasn't.
Yeah, but like, there's a difference between having the visual reference in there where your brain just kind of nods and says, I know what that is, versus just doing a Hadouken, which is an outright verbal Street Fighter 2 reference. But it fit in the movie. I mean, I gave it an 85. So when I was watching it, I was like, okay, kind of cringy, but also kind of cool. Because I would definitely do a Hadouken if I were in the Oasis.
I would love to do
there were a couple like times where they really did get to the point of, and I said earlier, like, hey, it's a reference. And that battle was one of them when he was Mega Godzilla. Like, he just transforms into Mega Godzilla. Like, it's self-explanatory. And then I think Wade goes, oh my God, it's Mega Godzilla.
Mecha Godzilla. Oh, you saw it twice. It's Mecha Godzilla.
Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Whatever. Yeah. Own me. Go for it. Regardless, that was one of the few times they did that. They did that with Chucky, too. They threw Chucky around, and then they used their one fuck with a PG-13
movie. I like
movie.
That, though. It's fucking Chucky. That was good. That got a laugh out of the theater.
But sometimes they pointed stuff out. Sometimes they didn't. It didn't take it away from me. I still enjoyed the movie. And there were some really cool references. Our guy, Mr. Sunday Movies from the Weekly Planet, he did a video and he was nauseated the whole time because it was long. But he talked about everything that was seen in that movie. And I'm excited for this movie to come out so people can do the frame by frame and find every single reference in there. Because there's a lot. There's a lot of random things from Hello Kitty to the Joker. You saw Batman briefly a couple times. Apparently there's some MCU characters in there. Spider-Man was in a like trench coat at one point in the beginning of the movie. So there were a lot of characters in
Batman
there.
Batman was mentioned by name. You go mountain climbing with Batman.
Batgirl or Batwoman or whatever. Mm. Yeah, she was in the fight. Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a good time. You know, there's some things to nitpick about for sure. I think it could have been developed more into a movie that was awesome and could have been a, like somebody called it the Back to the Future of our generation. Like, chill out. Back to the Future was, in my eyes, a perfect movie from start to finish and one of the most creative movies of all time. I'm not going to call that this. It's not the Back to the Future of our generation. Also, I want to throw this out there. A lot of people ask me this question. You will get the same response from me from now to the end of time. No, I did not read the book. I've never read the book. I will never read the book. I have reading comprehension of a 5-year-old. So, no, I don't read. But some people who read the book liked the movie. Some people who read the book didn't like the movie because the book and the movie are very different, apparently. It's a massive departure from the book. So there's your book answer.
Trill, did you get horny at the Mach 5 reference during the race? Speed Racer.
When I thought I'd had Speed Racer on my list of like worst movies.
I thought you loved not the movie. I thought you just loved the cartoon or anime, whatever.
No, I mean, I don't know if I loved it. I watched it as a kid, but it, you know, like you, anything that's a cartoon, you want to watch.
Didn't you say you wanted the Mach 5 as your car if you could pick any vehicle?
No, I didn't say that at all. That's a stupid car.
That's canon.
Calzone boy over here making shit up.
Wait, last thing, Trill, and Ken Jack will like this because he'll get to make fun of you. And you mentioned this on the Sunday podcast. I was disappointed that they used the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles and not the 1990 Ninja Turtles. That was a bit of a bummer for me. It didn't make sense really for the flashback element of this either.
Yeah, I can't imagine a universe where somebody has an option to pick a Ninja Turtle as your avatar and they pick the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles. It was a little bit disappointing. It was still cool to see the Ninja Turtles in there. The Ninja Turtles we all know and love.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think more because I mean, I gave it an 85 and I feel like I haven't said enough good things about it, but The 85 comes more from a general feeling. It's easier to pick out and nitpick the complaints I had with this movie because there were a few just in terms of how in your face it was about certain things. But I really think that the sum of its parts in terms of the action, in terms of like the visual stimulation you get from it, make up for like any deficiencies it might have. It's not a fantastic movie. It's not the Back to the Future of our generation, but it's a perfectly serviceable appetizer to Avengers Infinity War. I can't remember the last time we got a movie of this caliber in late March.
Yeah,
and it's entertaining.
That's like a blockbuster, because I know Get Out came out early last year, but like I'm talking just like a blockbuster that is, you know, helmed by Spielberg. Spielberg, though, I kind of wonder how much involvement he had in a lot of this movie, because there was only, I don't know how much live action, like 20 minutes of live action total. I mean, did he direct the CGI or did he just like have a guy do it for him?
Again, Red Letter Media, they brought this up too. They were like, Spielberg tied his name to this because he only had to direct 8 minutes of actual footage in this movie because everything else was CGI. They were like, was The Shining thing a real set? They go, no, Spielberg would have had to have directed that. So I don't know what's true or not on that, but I did laugh at that. Also, the ending I said earlier, so I guess we're not wrapping up yet. It was very heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
Very heavy-handed Spielberg, like, technology is bad. And, you know, you got to go out and experience the real world. It was very, like, the movie was very consistent throughout, and it had some Spielberg touch to it. But then all of a sudden at the end, you're like, boom, Spielberg. Exposition, heavy-handedness. Here it is. Take it. Eat it up.
Well, here's the thing that got me about the ending, and I won't take it away from the movie because, one, I don't know the book, and two, I don't know how you do this. They're obviously living in a dystopian society that forces people into the Oasis. And then at the end of the movie, the Rylance's character, his avatar wizard creation, puts his contract in front of Percival and says, sign it, and he doesn't sign it. Because I thought his big stance was going to be no one person or no one entity should own the Oasis. I thought that was going to be the big takeaway. And that what actually ended up happening is they took control of the Oasis anyway and closed on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And it pans over when he's saying that, and he's in this nice-ass apartment kissing his girlfriend on this fucking $5,000 Herman Miller chair. But we don't know if any of the real-world dire problems have been solved. They're still living in hell, for all we know. So That was kind of the thing where I'm like, I'm not going to take it away from the movie, but it left me with some questions. Like, are they just super rich now and nobody else's problems have been solved and we're supposed to feel great? I don't know.
That was the exact problem I came away with. Like, the entire time they're just fighting IOI, which is essentially just like, I guess, the metaphor for capitalism. And then once they take over, they're like, yes, one party dictatorship under capitalism is bad. But instead, we will have an oligarchy where all five of us are very rich, but everyone else is still extremely fucking poor and doesn't do anything except go online. Oh, but now you can't go online for 2 days, and you have to keep our 2 days out of the week, and you have to, in those 2 days, live your miserable fucking lives outside of the Oasis.
Yo, maybe it answers it more in the book. I don't know, but I felt like he was going to take that $500 trillion or whatever it was, or what do you say, half a trillion? I don't remember. A large amount of money and like work on the actual like problems in Columbus, Ohio. But what he ends up doing is just fucking closing the Oasis on Tuesdays and Thursdays, which, by the way, as a player, I'd be very pissed at.
Can we talk about that? How the technological revolution of the fucking century happened in Columbus, Ohio? Get the absolute fuck out of here.
Columbus, I'm not going to cool, shit man. On cities here. Like we got to be nice. People from Ohio listen to our pod. So
you think the Oasis would be developed in Columbus, Ohio, and not like fucking San Francisco or something, like a tech haven?
I don't know, dude. Maybe the San Francisco was like ground zero for the fucking corn syrup shortage of
the bandwidth riots.
Yeah, the bandwidth riots. Oh, I can't see my Jenna Hayes video.
Columbus is like the fucking ground zero for like mega diabetes, not the Oasis.
Oh, fuck you, dude.
Okay.
First off, like, Columbus is a great place. I like Columbus.
Time to wrap this up. Yeah. Ken Jack's hit that territory. We have to wrap up this review.
But one thing I want to add. God. I do think that when you come away asking questions about the end and building onto the world yourself, it's not always a bad thing. if I'm going away saying what exactly happened and imagining maybe what happened in my mind, that's a mental exercise for me that the movie has left with me, providing me more entertainment. And I think that's good. So even though they didn't wrap it up really tightly, maybe not that bad. They didn't have to.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you were gonna have a joke there. So that was actually a really good ending. So Ready Player One, which is now one of two Gundam Wing movies to come out in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And this one probably had the better Gundam Wing scene because Pacific Rim is loosely based off of Gundam Wing, at least the Jaegers are. Fun movie. We enjoyed it. Had some issues, but a pretty good time. And I would recommend it. I gave it an 86. Trollballen gave it an 85. Kenjack gave it an 82. Listeners gave it an 80. Next week, we're going to review A Quiet Place and Blockers, or as Trill called it,
Blockers. Caw-caw, Blockers. Also, they insinuated you could have sex in the Oasis, but they skipped over that. Remember that when they pan by the casino and then in the motel?
It happens in the book, apparently, as I've been told. So,
insert coin, okay. 25 cents.
Wait, did you like Simon Pegg's American accent? That blew me away.
I didn't care. I mean, I've never heard Simon Pegg's in this movie.
I've never heard it. It was just,
yeah, no, you're right. You're right. He's definitely not someone you'd associate with having an American accent at any point. Everything he's been in has been exceptionally British.
It was weird. It was really odd to notice. I don't think I've ever seen him have an American accent in anything. It just didn't taste good in my mouth.
Okay. That's it. Ready Player One. Go see it. We enjoyed it. Next up, top 10 movies that shaped your childhood / our childhood. We'll be right back on Light Camera Podcast.
The movie starts. And there you is, gonna prove you smart. You know references and all the years. They've called you nerd in Ready Player One. You feel heard. Cause there's one shining moment, you know what it's from. One shining moment, you don't look dumb. One shining moment, you know what it's from. RoboCop and Master Chief, you whisper to your date, hey, that's Chappie, and when it's done, the credits roll, you always did your best, you let everyone know, because there's one shining moment, you prove you know things, you laughed really loud when you saw the twins. Because one shining moment, you prove you know things. Everyone has to know, you get references. So make sure in theaters you laugh at them all.
Okay, we're back. Lights, Camera, Podcast. Last segment of the episode. Top 10 movies that shaped your childhood. We did a vote on our Google form, and great job to the listeners. You guys spelled out the names of the movies perfectly for the most part, and it was easy to sort and easy to track what everyone voted for. I will say off the top, for the listeners, we may have broke some rules ourselves, but for the listeners, if people said Star Wars Return of the Jedi or A New Hope or Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban or the Harry Potter and the Fellowship of the Sorcerer's Ring, we combine them just for the franchises. So for the big, big franchises, we combine the movies. Now, things that weren't connected, like The Dark Knight, we didn't combine with Batman 89. So just a little note off the top. Trollballens, name off your 10 through 6 really quick. We can maybe go back to them and talk about them later, but your 10 through 6 movies that shaped your childhood.
Okay. I'm going to want to come back for number 10 because I got a point on it. Number 10, Fire in the Sky, 1993. Number 9, Dumb and Dumber, 1994. Number 8, The Matrix, 1999. Number 7, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 1990. And number 6, The Lion King, 1994.
Lion King. I wasn't sure if The Lion King would be on your list.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Might be on all four lists here. We'll see. We'll see if Ken Jack has it. My 10 through 6. I don't have the years. That was great work on your part. I don't have the years, though. Number 10 for me. Okay. It's fair. Number 10 for me. No one else has this one. This is that VHS. Everyone has that VHS they burned into a crisp after watching too much. The Sesame Street Christmas special. Christmas Eve with Sesame Street. The Great Muppet Caper, number 9. Number 8, Space Jam. Number 7, Ocean's 11. And number 6 for me, Lion King. Lion King in at number 6 for me. Just like Trill, actually. Ken Jack, 10 through 6. What you got?
Number 10 for me, Small Soldiers. Number 9, Lion King. Number 8, Toy Story. Number 7, Finding Nemo. And number 6, The Blair Witch Project.
Ooh, okay. Blair Witch Project. I want to hear more about that one later. That one I didn't see once from any listeners. I like that. Little curveball there. Listeners, 10 through 6. 10, Small Soldiers, 4.9% of the vote. Number 9, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 4.9% of the vote. Number 8, Aladdin, 5.4% of the vote. Number 7, Mighty Ducks, the franchise, 6.3% of the vote. And number 6, another franchise, 6.8% of the vote, The Lord of the Rings. Also, somebody put Lord of the Cock Rings and someone else put porn 3 times. So shout out to them.
Parody, porn parody. Guess it's a parody.
Trill Ballins, number 5, movie that shaped your childhood slash youth.
Number 5 is Terminator 2, 1991. And I know what you're thinking. This is a very brutal movie for a 6-7-year-old Trill Ballins to be watching. Where were his parents? And I have to say to that, my parents were watching with me and enjoying it. The reason I picked Terminator 2 is because not only is it one of the best films of all time, it was groundbreaking at the time. And for someone who's 6 or 7 watching this movie, it is fucking terrifying. And so much of it, when you are that young watching it, sticks with you. And you know it's a good movie because you have Arnold Schwarzenegger shooting big guns in it and you enjoy that. But also when you're terrified and you can associate that fear with this franchise, it just stays with you, man. And it stayed with me. I will always love Terminator because I saw it when I was basically a baby. But Terminator 2 especially because it stuck with me.
We had T2 on a lot of the listeners' lists, and I went back and checked, and a lot of the listeners that had that also had older movies. So I think people kind of around the same age as you probably have the same exact views on T2. Like you said, it's a great movie. It's a classic, obviously.
And most of my movies are actually, almost all of them except for 2 were 90s movies. So The Matrix is the youngest movie I have on here in 1999. I cut myself off because I think 15 or 16 is at that tail end of childhood. But yeah, I don't have too many like old movies here. Well, relative to my age, when I saw them, they were new.
I actually have 2 old movies, I think. I think I have 2 movies that are older than you potentially.
I feel like when you're younger and you're watching like a movie that's even 2 years old, it feels super fucking ancient when you're watching it.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. There are things that you see that are like, man, that is old. That is old as shit. And then some that don't feel as old. Like Lion King always feels like it was released in the early 2000s, but it was of course 1994. A lot of early 90s kids don't remember seeing that movie or are close to not remember seeing that movie. Number 5 for me. Similar to my number 10 pick, Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, this movie shaped my love of Christmas. It's one of my favorite Christmas movies. The whole franchise, well, that's actually not true, just the first and the second. I would imitate the Kevin McAllister mirror pick where he puts his hands on his face after putting on the aftershave. Did that a lot in my Christmas photos as a young kid. Home Alone is my number five.
Ooh.
It was very similar to Ocean's 11 for me. It opened up a lot of the creative imagination I had, you know, just about putting things together and, you know, the endings there, the heist elements of both in a sense, and opened up my imagination to that. And I loved the Home Alone movies. Also shaped my view of New York and made me love New York, despite the fact that some of New York is terrifying in that movie. Like where they walk down Central Park West and he runs into all the very creepy people, like the creepy cab driver and the hookers, the homeless people that are shouting at him. That terrified me, but otherwise it's a good view of New York. So Home Alone is my number five. Both of them, Home Alone 1 and Home Alone 2. Shout out to the music. Great music. That's my number five. Ken Jack, what's your number five?
Also forgot about that creepy old man that accosts him in the hotel lobby. My number five is the movie Ants. So when you're growing up, you're either a Bugs Life person. Yes, you're either a Bugs Life person or an ants person. And I was an ants person, which sucks because it definitely fucked me up. That termite battle scene was like the fucking CGI Omaha beach scene, more or less. It was really fucked up. It was really
who voiced
like,
the main ant? Who voiced?
I think it was Woody Allen or something. And that's probably not right. I don't remember. I think I remember Gene Hackman for a fact was in it, and so was Stallone. And Christopher Walken, I think, but it fucked me up. It was really dark, and it was more or less. The more I was thinking about it, putting it on this list, it was like the pre-emoji movie, emoji movie. In that, the guy Z, he wanted to like do his own thing and not be a worker ant. He wanted to like express himself, and everyone was like, "Hey, fuck you, do what you're supposed to do." So, emoji movie, you ripped off a childhood Ken Jack classic, Ants, the movie that made me very scared of bugs. Thank you.
Well, I think emoji movie ripped off a B movie,
20 other
which ripped off Ants. Yeah, Ants definitely was the Burger King to a Bug's Life McDonald's. So I got to give you that one there.
I went years thinking Bug's Life was considered one of the best Pixar movies because I loved A Bug's Life, but it didn't get much love in our bracket and it just isn't considered one of the best. But I still like A Bug's Life. Both A Bug's Life and Ants have two problematic people at the top of those movies.
Who's the Bug's Life voice actor?
The villain.
Kevin Spacey?
Yeah. Nothing is sacred anymore.
No.
One of my favorite things back in college, I had a movie class and we had to rank our favorite Scorsese films and somebody put Ants on there and he has nothing to do with Ants. He's like, yeah, number three, Ants. What?
What the fuck?
The Ants just mowing somebody down with a Tommy gun while give me shelter, please, in the background.
All right, Ken Jack, Ants. Ken Jack's list is really unique. I like this. Listeners, number five, 11.7% of the vote. The first movie or franchise with more than 10%. Space Jam. Not shocked. Thought it would be higher, actually. But Space Jam is up there, as it should be. I had Space Jam. I'm thinking it may not be up there for either. But I do like Space Jam. Space Jam, for me, was one of those sports movies that shifted my love of things from Star Wars to sports. Got me in the basketball. Rudy was another one not on my list that made me like college football, but
I'm just imagining you like just fucking watching the Monstars play and you're like, damn, they're good. I should pick up a ball.
There was also a video game. The Monstars video game was an awesome basketball game to play. Love that game. That was one of the early CD-ROM games. Love that one. Great game. Number five, Trill Bolland said T2, Terminator. I had Home Alone. Ken Jack had Ants. Listeners had Space Jam. Number four, Trill Bolland.
Number four, Jeff, I'm close to you. Home Alone, 1990. This is just Home Alone for my list, but I guess you could throw Lost in New York City or whatever it was in there as well. Yeah, everything that Jeff said, and also it instilled in me the diehard belief that I, pretty much close to the same age as Kevin McAllister, could fend off two grown men breaking into my house with just a BB gun. So it made me feel a little bit better about myself, even though I would get just what's it? No. I mean, Family Guy had a skit on that of like what would really happen. But yeah, I loved Home Alone, dude. It was like one of those movies I actually saw in a theater. That's how old I am. You guys probably were not born yet, but it's stuck with me and it's something I watch every year at Christmas.
I love Home Alone, but I don't consider it formative in that I don't think it impacts me today in any way whatsoever as far as like how I grew up or anything. Like, I'm not like, wow, I just did that because of fucking Kevin McAllister. Like, I don't think that's how it affected me. I just think it's a fun movie to watch. So I wouldn't consider it formative.
I don't think it affected me, but as I go through the years, like, I think it's formative in the sense that like it shaped my Christmas experience, which is like, you know, something I experience once a year for the next 20 something years of my life. Cause I think of Christmas, I think of Home Alone.
Do you like set traps for your wife every single time she comes home on Christmas Day? It's a Trombone's Christmas tradition.
Yeah, dude. I walk in and I'm like, do I look fat in this shirt? Boom, trap set. Like, you can't answer this, honey. So I'm reversing the roles here because I'm the self-conscious one.
So Home Alone. Home Alone was not on the listeners list. It came in at number 15 with 3.8% of the vote, but still definitely up there. My number four, Kenjuk, you had this one as well. This one for me, one of my favorite toys of all time, another fun video game, Small Soldiers. Small Soldiers to this day is one of my favorite movies, like from not just childhood, but of all time. And I understand it's not a classic. It's not a great movie, but just the idea of those badass toys. It was just a badass version of Toy Story, basically. Like that's what it boiled down to. The Commando Elite, the Gorgonites. They had some great voice actors in that movie. I don't think anybody problematic.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Was there anybody problematic in that movie? I don't know. Like I said, nothing sacred anymore anyway. But awesome movie. Again, the toys were the coolest movie toys I've ever seen. And they were life-size, like actually like the movie that you could buy in store. They were awesome. Loved them all. What was your favorite character from Small Soldiers? And were you a Commando Elite or a Gorgonites guy? I was actually a Gorgonites guy. I didn't like the Commando Elite as much.
Well, they're the bad guys. Aren't you supposed to like the Gorgonites by default?
Yeah, but like they're, I don't know, they were like the Americans. I don't know how you looked at it, but they were, I don't know. I feel like people definitely like the Commando Elite.
It's a good question. I think I did. I like the Gorgonites more. Frank Langella, our boy, is Archer.
Yeah.
Great role.
Frank Langella. He played both Nixon and Archer. Also, David Cross, Jay Moore is in that role. The guy who plays Ben on Veep, Dennis Leary's in that role. It's a Globotech. I think that's the company. But yeah, Small Soldiers is a great watch. I need to watch that again soon. I haven't watched that in a long time. I've said that a bunch. But Small Soldiers for me, that's one of those like toy, again, imagination movies that really gets the mind flowing as a youngin. So Small Soldiers on my list and on Ken Jack and the listeners list. Mine comes in at number four. Listeners and Ken Jack have it at number 10. Ken Jack, what's your number four? Another dark movie? You went with Blair Witch and then Ants.
Yeah, actually it is. It's Saving Private Ryan. So I'm a big history buff, and me and my brothers used to be obsessed with World War II. I have two younger brothers, and we were obsessed because of this movie. We used to watch it periodically, and we used to play Army in our backyard a lot, cosplaying as World War II soldiers. So please actually thank us for our service. We had like a big wooded backyard, so we would like dig trenches and like fake play Army against Nazis and shit. And it didn't stick with me or my middle brother, but my youngest brother, Tommy's now in South Korea with the Marines. So shout out to you, Tommy, out there potentially fighting North Korea.
Okay, so another rather dark movie. Do they get happier on your list here? Or does this just really explain your mindset?
The next three are definitely happier.
Okay. Okay, good. I was a little worried for a second that maybe developed your trolling mindset on Twitter. So Ken Jack has Saving Private Ryan at number four. Number four for the listeners. I thought this would be higher. 13% of the vote. The Star Wars franchise comes in at number four for the listeners. So Star Wars does not crack the top two or three. It comes in at number four. So the number fours again, Trill Ballins had Home Alone. I had Small Soldiers. Ken Jack had Saving Private Ryan. The listeners had Star Wars. All of them. Though the original was the most voted on movie, A New Hope. But next after that was Return of the Jedi, which is not totally surprising because as a kid, I liked Return of the Jedi more than I liked Empire Strikes Back. And that's evolved that I got. Is that true for you guys?
I won't discuss that yet.
Same.
Okay. I like that. Though I always will say the space battle in Return of the Jedi is maybe the best space battle in Star Wars. Number three, Trollballins. What movie?
Yes, sir. I had Jurassic Park number three, and it was released in 1993. This movie, not only the movie, but the marketing and the merchandising around it, I was huge into. I was a big fan of the Jurassic Park Velociraptors candy, which I think was like the precursor to the Jar Jar Binks tongue that you suck. And then they also had the Dilophosaurus, whatever the name was. They had the things called the Spitters candies, which were like jawbreakers that tasted like coconut. And they didn't taste that good, but the Jurassic Park candies were everywhere, and I'd always get them. I probably saw the movie three times in theaters. Sorry, Dad, for making you watch that over and over, but I think he liked it. And when you talk about scenes and you talk about watching this movie as a kid, like Jurassic Park has, you know, the T-Rex scene with the water, and it has like the big sweeping shots of dinosaurs, which I had just never seen before in a movie. And it was the right balance of being kind of scary and kind of, you know, Spielbergian. And it also had the kid protagonists as well, which you were able to relate to because you're like, the kids are helping to save the day. So it's like the perfect movie to see when you're 8 or 9. And it's made a huge impact on me, man. Still love dinosaurs to this day.
And it was a movie of wonder too. You know, it was a movie that captured people. It was iconic, but it was an iconic movie for what it did, for how it looked, for what it achieved technologically, and it's a movie that'll live on forever, and I think you defined it. It was not on the listener's list either.
Really?
Where it was in the listener's list? I don't even see it. It was number 11. It barely missed the list, but it was up there. So a little surprised it wasn't on the list. I figured it would have been top five maybe, but Jurassic Park, that's a good pick.
I feel like some of these movies that if you don't see them when they're released as you're a kid, like you don't see them until you're 15. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Like I saw this because it was a huge cultural phenomenon and everyone was seeing it back when it was released, but it might not be something like if you're born in 1995, it might not be something you're watching because you're watching other movies.
So Jurassic Park comes in at number three for Trollballins. My number three, this is the second oldest movie, maybe the second oldest movie I have on my list. Oldest being Sesame Street, Christmas Eve on Sesame Street. That's 1978. Great Muppet Caper is 1981. This is the first rated R movie I ever saw. I don't remember really why my dad let me watch it, but I had to probably do with the Cleveland Indians being a part of it. 1989, Major League. That is the first rated R movie I saw. It was the first time I saw a Cleveland team win a championship, so that obviously right there means a lot to my life. Major League to this day might be my favorite sports movie. We'll see when we eventually do favorite sports movies. Still funny, still holds up to me. I get goosebumps still when the Indians win the pennant at the end of the movie. I love Major League. You always remember your first rated R movie. That's my number three. I wanted to put it higher, but it just couldn't crack the top two. But Major League is up there without any question. That's my number three. Again, the Indians winning the pennant, Cleveland sports team winning something is a big factor in that one. My dad always joked that was the only one I saw for a while until the Cavs. So an easy number three pick for me.
Yeah, that's an out there pick, but I respect it, especially from a cultural standpoint for you.
What was your first rated R movies you guys saw?
I think it was Saving Private Ryan, and it was fucked up.
Probably Terminator 2. Terminator 2 had to be rated R, was it?
Oh, I mean, yeah, he fucking shoved a knife through someone's throat.
Yeah, there's so much killing. I remember the first Terminator had boobs, though. That may have been the first time I saw boobs on the screen.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think I watched Terminator 2 first, and then my parents were like, okay, there are no boobs in Terminator 2, so we'll let him rent Terminator 1. And then there are boobs in Terminator 1, and I was just like, hell yeah, dude.
This is
pretty neat.
I love how that's the bad thing. Like, oh, there's boobs. Like, you can't watch this. But meanwhile, fucking Terminator's like throwing blades through people's throats and blowing people up.
Ken Jack with the deep cultural societal commentary right now on violence and sex.
Free the nipple.
Ken Jack. Number three, Ken Jack. You said they're going to start getting happier here because your last three were Blair Witch, Ants, and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah. So my number three is Homeward Bound. Fellas, aww. I really love dogs. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, so please forgive me. I also love good food, music, Netflix. I'm laid back. I'm down to earth. I love having fun. I'm an old soul. I like guacamole and staying in on a Friday night to play board games. And to get that out of the way, it was formative to my love of dogs. And I tried to get my dog at the time, Buddy, to talk to me for like a month after I watched it too. And I love, it's such a fun and uplifting movie. And Michael J. Fox is at the leave his Chance. And I couldn't name another cast member in the entire movie, but Michael J. Fox is great as Chance, such a pleasant little mutt. And it was just fun, really feel good story.
I was surprised by Homeward Bound and the listeners vote. It only got 4 votes.
Not surprised, really. I feel like it wasn't that popular really? Movie.
See, Homeward Bound was a movie I felt like growing up that a lot of people talked about. It wasn't on my list, but I mean, it would have been pretty close. But I like that. That's a good pick.
Going back to my list, do you consider Home Alone to be a proper children's movie? Or is it more of a family movie? Or is there a difference?
I'd say family.
Because The Lion King, I feel like on my list, is the only actual proper children's movie here. And Homeward Bound is definitely a children's movie.
Home Alone has some adult humor in it.
Yeah, but so do DreamWorks animated features. I don't know. It's hard to make the distinction. I guess what I'm trying to say is like, got to have a few of those children's movies in there. But most of my movies were, I just saw these movies when I was too young.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I saw Major League pretty young. So number 3 for Ken Jack, Homeward Bound. Number 3 for listeners, speaking of Lion King, 16.3% of the vote, The Lion King. So number 3 for us, Jurassic Park for Trill, Major League for myself, Homeward Bound for Ken Jack, Lion King for the listeners. Number 2, Trill Ballins.
Number 2 on my list is E.T., The Extraterrestrial. This one was released in 1982, so this is one of 2 movies on my list that were released before I was born, but we had the VHS. We had the VHS tape, and my mom loved this movie, so watch E.T. quite frequently. E.T. actually, if you adjust movies for inflation, is the 6th highest grossing movie of all time still, which is pretty wild. This was huge. And E.T. was, again, going back to Jurassic Park, that right Spielbergian mix when you're watching as a child of wonderment, entertainment, and also terror, because E.T. was very scary to me, especially once they out like the isolation tents and that whole scene went down. Pretty terrifying. So I loved it.
E.T. kind of looked like Willem Dafoe.
He thinks he's slick, man.
Jokes aside, though, I agree. That was one of the more terrifying scenes as a kid.
Yeah, when he's getting all sick. Scenes,
yeah, the isolation stuff was terrifying. And also the James and the Giant Peach early scenes were pretty scary, too. That movie fucked me up. That was a messed up movie. But E.T., that's a great pick. E.T.'s not on my list, and I struggled to not put that one on there because that's another movie that
it's
very relevant to my child.
Yeah, James and the Giant Peach was good. Probably my second favorite peach in cinematic history.
Shout out Army Hammer. My number 2. This one, I will say, was pretty close to number 1, which might be surprising when you hear my number 1, as if you don't know what it is already. But this one was easily the second most important movie of my childhood.
Can I guess
what my second movie is?
Yeah.
Yes.
Back to the Future.
No. So ooh! Back to the Future is, you could say, is maybe my favorite movie of all time. I do love Back to the Future, but I saw Back to the Future right around the time where I would stop saying childhood. Like I saw it, but I didn't mean anything to me because I guess I just didn't appreciate it. And then when I got a little older, I watched it more again, and that's when I really fell in love with it. So I just, because some people asked us too on Reddit, like, how would you define youth and childhood? And I think it just depends on, I mean, it's all subjective. For me, I said either college or high school, and I actually stopped at it to like mid to the end of middle school.
Yeah, for me like is when I stopped wearing diapers. Yeah. So I cut it off like 15 or 16.
Oh, I want to guess too, Jeff. So my guess is the Muppets, the Great Flapdoodle.
Ooh, okay. Kendrick just like the Muppets. Oh, yeah.
That's an actual title.
No. The what? The Great Caper? It's not even the real fucking title. More proof you haven't seen enough.
Indiana Jones?
Sue me.
Indiana Jones?
No, it's Toy Story.
Muppets. Oh. Flattle.
Toy Story came out at the perfect time. I was four. I was four or five, 4 years old. The toy blitz for Toy Story was, like Small Soldiers, amazing, but up to different levels. Burger King gave away full-size Toy Story toys, and they actually, in their commercials, I'll never forget these commercials. This is right up there with the kid snowman eating tomato soup from Campbell's. The toys jumped out of stockings, and I always loved that. So I had a lot of Burger King to get those toys. But Toy Story, it was just amazing. You hadn't seen anything like that before. I mean, I'm sure it's the same thing for people who were older when Snow White came out. You know, you hadn't seen, or Wizard of Oz. You just hadn't seen anything quite like that at that level. And so at that age, it was unbelievable to me. It blew my mind. And Toy Story, again, it has a lot to do with age. And you said earlier, Trill, there's some movies, if you're not young enough or you're not old enough to see them, you see them later in life and it may not mean as much. Where I think a kid nowadays, if they see Toy Story, they may go, eh. Right. I don't know about that, right? Because, you know, there's no, like, there's a computer in Toy Story. Is there a computer? There might be one in the background, maybe. But, I mean, it's, nothing's, like, really technological in that movie. It's like a NES controller. It's very basic, and so it may not connect. It was the perfectly timed movie for my age. Again, the toys are awesome. I love the Toy Story toys. So it really, it just connected with me. And again, you said it earlier, Trill, it was all about the timing. That movie comes out 5 or 6 years later, I'm sure I'd love it, but it doesn't mean as much to me as when I saw it as a kid. So Toy Story, almost number one for me, because it was very influential in my childhood. I loved that movie.
Toy Story 2, Buzz Lightyear to the Rescue on PS1, still one of my all-time favorite video games.
Yeah.
Fucking love that game. I know it's a rare.
The Buzz Lightyear.
Nothing, as Trill would say.
I was playing like fucking Final Fantasy VIII, and just imagining you guys are like playing Toy Story video games on PS1 makes me feel ancient.
The Buzz Lightyear cartoon got some votes on this list. Oh. It didn't make top 10 for the listeners, but it got some votes. So Toy Story is my number two. Ken Jack, number two.
Number two for me is Harry Potter. Not anyone in particular, just all of them. Smart guy brag here. I read the books long before I ever watched the movies. Growing up, my best friend's parents from Ireland, and they hit the wave of Harry Potter super early. So they brought the book backs with them before they were released here. And so we started reading them really early, went to all the midnight releases and everything. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it just turned into us being super hyped up for the Harry Potter movies. First two we thought were really great. Everyone after that, not really as great. Shout out, I think his name is Christopher Columbus. That's probably not right. Whoever directed the first two. But they were great movies, and they formed a lot of my
childhood.
I think it was Christopher Columbus. Chris Columbus.
Yeah, and they were great movies. And you empathize a lot with the kids when you're, like, I was the same age as Harry Potter when it came out. I was like 11 or something, and just it was just really fun. I enjoyed it a ton.
Yeah, I feel that. That's something where I was just born at the wrong time, because by the time Harry Potter was out, I just didn't connect with it as much as, it's kind of like the same SpongeBob thing. It just wasn't in my rear view, it was in my rear view.
Yeah, you missed the timing on SpongeBob for sure. Like that I can totally see why you wouldn't connect. And Harry Potter, I guess, the same. Harry Potter, those are the books that taught me I couldn't read well. You know, I can read. I just couldn't. The reading comprehension really lacked there. It's a good pick at Harry Potter. Harry Potter, for the listeners, came in actually behind Home Alone, Shrek, Land Before Time, and Three Ninjas. It came in at number 16.
Jesus.
Yo, I watched Three Ninjas when they came out, and I would never put them on my list.
There was a lot of votes. I mean, it cracked the top 15. It almost cracked the top 10. It was at number 12.
Well, Three Ninjas were huge, dude. I don't debate that. But also at the same time, like, I remember, I remember where I was the first time I saw most of these movies, and that's kind of where I started with the list. Is like, what movies do I remember actually watching? And yeah, that's how I did it.
So Kent Jack, Harry Potter, number two. Number two for the listeners. We'll play a little game here. This shocked me. Okay, well, let me rephrase that. It's not shocking when I think about it, but I did not expect this to be at number two at all.
The Dark Knight?
No. No. Dark Knight got some votes, but no, I think Dark Knight, to have that be your childhood, you have to be pretty young.
John Wick.
Okay, come on. Any serious guesses?
I got no fucking idea. What decade?
My Siri just went off my phone.
Give me the release year.
Release year. I'll give you a time. Between 1990 and 1995.
Little Mermaid?
No, that's a good guess, though. I'm not saying it's a cartoon, but that's a good guess. In terms of timing. Where does Little Mermaid on the list? I don't actually see it anywhere near the top.
Is it a Disney movie?
Man, I'm in my head right now.
It is not a Disney movie.
Is it live action or animated?
It is a live action movie. Yeah, it is not a Disney movie.
1990 and 1995.
Sandlot?
It is. It's the Sandlot. 19.3% of the vote. My next clue is going to be there is an actor in two of the movies on the listeners list who's in this movie, and it's James Earl Jones. Actually, James Earl Jones is in the number 4, 3, and 2 movies for the listeners, Star Wars, Lion King, and Sandlot. Wait, isn't he in Space Jam too? No, he's not in Space Jam. Never mind. That's a different famous dad. So Sandlot, number 2 for the listeners, 19.3% of the vote. It wasn't anywhere near the number 1. It was 10%, 11% off what number 1 got, but I was surprised the Sandlot was number 1. I just didn't expect that one to be up there.
I get it, though. I get it.
I get it, too.
Yeah. I love Sandlot. Sandlot's great.
Yeah, Sandlot's great, but if you would have told me, though, and I feel like you guys might agree with me, if you would have told me the sports movie was number 2, I would have said Space Jam, and I would have probably doubled down on that. I'd have said, question, Space Jam.
Easily.
You thought Space Jam would have been ahead of the Sandlot.
Yeah. Yeah. So number 2, Trouble Ballin's E.T. I have Toy Story. Kenjack has Harry Potter. The listeners have Sandlot. All right. Number 1. I have a... Something tells me that all 3 of us have the same number 1.
Yeah.
We'll see. Trouble Ballin's, what's your number 1?
Star Wars, but specifically Return of the Jedi. Now, you mentioned an interesting phenomenon that happened to me as well. As a kid, I would have ranked them Return of the Jedi, Star Wars, and The Empire Strikes Back. But as an adult, I would rank them Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, and Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi was my favorite because it had a lot of lightsaber battling, had a lot of action sequences. Luke looked like a badass. Wasn't particularly fond of the Ewoks, but there's something about Return of the Jedi that seems more accessible to children, and I think that's maybe what George Lucas was going after. Yep. Now, I did watch all of them in sequence, but I Return of the Jedi was my favorite for a long time. I remember I watched all of these in 1993 for the first time, and I remember exactly around like the time I started watching them, because I was so blown away. I mean, I just love these movies. And I mentioned, though, that, like, you know, when you're a kid, old movies look super old. These did look kind of old, but it didn't bother me because it was so cool.
I think it was the furry little bears that got you going on.
Yeah.
Way to ruin a night.
Yeah.
That's a good pick. I actually didn't see Empire Strikes Back until after I saw Return of the Jedi. I missed it in theaters because I saw them first in theaters, which is awesome. And I'm forever grateful that that happened. And then that was awesome that I was able to see them when they re-released in the mid 90s, 1997, I believe. Just to have that happen it was special. It helped spark my love of Star Wars. So Trouble Ballin's number 1, Star Wars Return of the Jedi. I went about the same way I did for the listeners. I just combined them. My number 1, obvious, no question, Star Wars. Toy Story was close, though. I can't say no question. But Star Wars for me, and I'll try not to get too deep here. I mean, it's the most, one of the most important things, I think, to me of my life. It was the biggest thing possible for me as a child. I abandoned it once I started getting into sports and I got older and it was like, oh, Star Wars is nerdy. And then I don't know when it happened. I think late high school when I guess for me, you know, you stop being insecure and giving a shit about what people think about you. You're like, damn, like I fucking love Star Wars. Like, why do I not, like, even during the prequels, like I like them and I bought the toys and all that. But even like when Revenge of the Sith came out, it's like, oh yes, I like Revenge of the Sith, and okay, Star Wars is cool, but like it wasn't like, oh my god, like right now, again, I'm in a room of Star Wars toys, and recapturing that and then loving Star Wars was an important thing to me. You know, even when I'm down and things aren't going well, you know, I can always turn to Star Wars and enjoy it, cheers me up. And I mean, that was the point of George Lucas releasing them, whether they are for kids or not. I mean, it's an escape. And I think the Star Wars documentary, Empire of Dreams, it's on YouTube. It's free. It's one of the best movie documentaries. I think Walter Cronkite, actually, of all people, like a man who saw the world in such a big picture being a newscaster, said the thing about Star Wars and why it's so great and connects around the world, I guess with the exception of China, because it was never really big there, is that they're not on Earth. There's many different races. You're not in a specific country. You're not tied to anything. It's just, it can be anywhere. It can be anyone. It's for literally everyone. And it's just majorly important to me, obviously to you, Trill. Yeah. And it'll be, again, the moment where I was like, I need to stop giving a shit if people think it's nerdy for me to like Star Wars. And now Star Wars is so mainstream that it doesn't really have that moniker anymore. The moment I,
hey guys, I'm kind of a nerd. I like Star Wars.
Harry
Potter. Well, now it's Warby Parkers. Not people who say, like, I haven't seen Star Wars. Like, the fuck is wrong with you? Like, it's like, that's freakish, not like Star Wars. But yeah, again, sorry to get deep here. But the moment that happened, I was like, oh yeah, Star Wars is still great. So again, number one for me. Slam dunk in that position. Ken Jack, you either have Star Wars at number one or you don't have it at all in your top 10, which would be shocking to me.
Take a wild guess. A wild, wild guess of what my number one is.
Star Wars.
I mean, if it's...
Yeah, it's fucking Star Wars, man. Formative childhood thing ever.
Yeah, but you're going to say your favorite was like Revenge of the Sith or some bullshit like that.
No, I watched them relatively early because my dad's a huge fan. So we watched Empire Strikes Back first, I believe. We were super out of order with it. Didn't watch it in theaters either when it re-released, but we had all the VHSs like we were talking about earlier. We watched all those. I think I was more hyped for Phantom Menace than like any movie I was as a kid. Like even as a child, like when Lion King, like 1.5 when all this came out, like I was the biggest Lion King fan, but still, I was like, I don't give a shit about that. And then when Star Wars starts coming out again, I was fucking over the moon. So it's easily Star Wars. I mean, I dressed up like Star Wars characters, I think, like 90% of my childhood Halloweens. I just, like, everyone wants to be a character in it. Like, me and my brothers would play it in the yard, just, like, cosplaying World War II, which is wildly different. But we just loved it. Loved all the Star Wars games. Loved the Star Wars culture. I never really, I think I had that same period you had, Jeff, where it was, like, an intermittent high school spot where, like, I was just, like, not super into it. And then once I got back into college, I was just, like, fucking straight back into the zone on it. So mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a tremendous cultural force, like you were saying.
Yeah, I think people use Star Wars as a way to reconnect to their youth, not to go too deep into it, but it is cool how a movie which launched in 1977 is just so loved by many different generations, and there's been so many iterations of it that there's so many good points to get in. But like, I think it's just that connection. Like even the original Star Wars fans love it because it reminds them of a period of their time where they were a kid. I love it because it reminds me of just being a kid. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I think Star Wars is a kid's movie and I think that's okay. That's why I didn't expect The Last Jedi to have some great, like deep meaning, even though it was a little darker, but I think at the end of the day they're just fun fucking movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the thing with all of it. I know people get so poopy pantsed, and I mean, whatever, if you didn't like The Last Jedi you didn't like it, but you know, it was a fucking blast, man. And it was a little darker and it did get a little deep. I mean, there's some crazy shit in there that you hadn't seen before, but the thing is, it was still fun. The Force Awakens was still fun, and I can still pull fun elements out of the prequels outside of the, you know, the politics of it and the trade federations and shit like that.
Trade blockades, yeah.
There were still things that I can pull out that were fun. I mean, that's why I love them. I mean, look, if you listen to this podcast and you've listened since the beginning, you know we love Star Wars. And we toned down the talk after The Last Jedi, but it's awesome. Love Star Wars. And watch that documentary. If you like Star Wars, watch Empire of Dreams. I think it was a PBS documentary, so it's not even me. Like, go watch an illegal video. Like, it was PBS, so it's just on YouTube. It's a must watch. It's really cool. And it just covers the original three. Lastly, listeners, number one, what's your guess? 30.4% of the votes went to this one. It was a landslide winner. No, we already said that at number four.
Fuck. Dark Knight.
You just really want it to be Dark Knight. No, not Dark Knight.
The Godfather.
The Godfather Part 3, specifically.
Okay, it came out between 1990 and 1995. Again?
Yeah, cartoon or...
Take one guess first, and then I'll narrow it down for you.
Fucking... Oh, damn it. We didn't say Lion King. Did we say Lion King?
Lion King came in at number 3.
Fuck. Jumanji? I have no idea.
I don't fucking know, dude.
I thought you'd get this one. It's the first and only Pixar movie on this list. It's Toy Story.
No, I thought we said it already. I missed that.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I can't believe...
Not as climactic.
I personally cannot believe Toy Story is released in 1995. It was so far ahead of its time that it's unbelievable to me that when you say it's between 1990 and 1995, Toy Story would even come out then.
Nice excuse.
And it's funny because you watch like the test footage for the Pixar machine or whatever that made... Star, and actually, again, if you watch Empire of Dreams, they talk about when Lucasfilm and all them helped make the Pixar machine or whatever it's called. Then you look at the footage that came out before Toy Story, like the test footage, and it's like a big gassy fart. It looks terrible. And then Toy Story, someone I actually saw on Twitter today in one of our bracket votes said it doesn't hold up as well, which, I mean, yeah, the animation is not as good as Toy Story 3, but, man, for what it was in 1995. And I actually remember Toy Story so well. Like, it's so, like, vivid in my mind. That's why I also agree. That like it doesn't seem like it was 1995, and especially for what it was. But yeah, that's the listeners number one, 30.4% of the vote. So number one, I'll just read the list. Trill Ballins from 10 to 1, Fire in the Sky, Dumb and Dumber, The Matrix, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Lion King, Terminator 2, Home Alone, Jurassic Park, E.T., Star Wars, specifically Return of the Jedi. I had Sesame Street, Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, The Great Muppet Caper, Space Jam, Ocean's 11, Lion King, Home Alone, Small Soldiers, Major League, Toy Story, and Star Wars. Ken Jack had Small Soldiers, Lion King, Toy Story, Finding Nemo, Blair Witch Project, Ants, Saving Private Ryan, Homeward Bound, Harry Potter, Star Wars. Then the listeners had Small Soldiers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Aladdin, Mighty Ducks, Lord of the Rings, Space Jam, Star Wars, Lion King, Sandlot, and Toy Story. Listeners 20 through 11, the things that missed the cut, Remember the Titans, Little Giants, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Superbad, which is, I think, people who misunderstood this as, like, because when I initially said defined your youth, I think they thought, like, Superbad defined how I was in high school and college. Harry Potter, Home Alone, Shrek, Land Before Time, Three Ninjas at number 12, and then Jurassic Park, number 11. Final comments here about the top 10 movies that shaped your childhood / youth.
Yeah, I need to say... I had Fire in the Sky at number 10. Not that great of a movie, but the single most terrifying alien abduction sequence in cinematic history fucked me up so hard. And I will never forgive my mom for taking me to see that.
Damn, I don't think I've ever even seen that movie.
YouTube that scene. It's terrible. Now imagine watching that shit when you're 8 or 9. It's awful.
So the only one I wanted to touch on for me, is in fact Blair Witch Project. So I think I mentioned it earlier. I have like a, woods in my childhood home's backyard. So the Blair Witch Project really fucked me up. And I don't think I went into my backyard, while it was after dark until I was like after high school, like college. I was just fucking terrified of going in the woods at the dark. And a shout out number 11, Bedazzled. I think Elizabeth Hurley, in that movie, jump started my puberty. So thank you for that.
Dude, you should be a baseball writer for how horny you are about childhood memories.
Grunting. You guys can't see what's going on under my desk.
Oh, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Oh, God.
That was referenced in Ready Player One. I like that scene when Mendelsohn was getting the information in his ear. Drinking tab, listening to Duran Duran. I thought that was pretty funny. That was a good little scene. So that's it. That was a fun episode. I was glad we were able to do that because that was a very hard one to vote for because it required the short answer vote as opposed to me listing every movie released in the last 30 years in a form and having people click on it. So yeah, good times. That was fun. Not sure what we're going to do next week. Maybe we'll do the baseball team thing. Maybe we'll do baseball movies. I'm not quite sure. Maybe we'll just not do baseball. We'll do something else. We'll think on it. But remember, buy a Bavarian Legend at AMC this weekend. It's Bavarian Legend weekend. Please take photos of yourself with the Bavarian Legend at the theater. Tweet them at us, at Ledge Camera Pod. It's going to be a good time. You got to see this week A Quiet Place and Blockers, or as Trill calls it,
Cuckoo! Blockers, and that's not funny anymore. We're done doing that.
Okay. We've retired that bit. We've also retired the Tom Cruise bussy joke, by the way. Just gonna let you know. We need to start a LCP Hall of Fame of jokes we retire. That one has been retired.
I don't know, man. I feel like that one's always on the bench. Just waiting for the right time to come in.
It's Michael Jordan. It may not stay retired for long.
That would have been my avatar in Ready Player One. I just would have been Tom Cruise's gigantic bussy on a stick man.
Or that's your car. You're just riding on top of Tom Cruise's fake ass.
Giant ass on wheels. Powered by farts.
So that's that. Longer episode this week. We hope you enjoyed it.
Hey.
That's it.
Hey, guess what I did this past week? What? The Court of Trill upheld its ruling and watched Game Over, Man. And I give it a 40.
Oh. Yeah, it's tough, right?
It's mildly entertaining at parts, but it is Workaholics, the movie, which I'm fine with in some respects. There were some scenes like fucking Steve-O getting killed that I thought were hilarious. And then there are other scenes that just weren't.
A lot of dicks.
What'd you think of the ass-eating scene?
It kind of forced, figuratively and literally.
Also, speaking of Home Alone, Daniel Stern is in that movie. He gets his penis shot off.
Dude, his character looked rough.
He did. He looked terrible. What was I going to say about it? I don't know. I'm out of ammo here. I got nothing else. Vote for the Infinity War favorite character bracket. Vote or submit your entry to the Avengers Infinity War death pool in the description below. For Ken Jack and Troy Ballins, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you next week. You can't fight the friction.